Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, where top performers share their secrets to help you achieve your personal and your professional goals. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my genuinely amazing guests, we bring you inspiring and actionable insights to take your life and your business to the next level. Ranked in the top 2% globally, this podcast is a must listen. And again, it's because of my guests. They're fascinating. So whether you're tuning in for entrepreneurial tips, career advice, or personal development strategies, get ready to turn inspiration into action, challenges into triumphs, and dreams into reality. My guest today, Cynthia Kay, isn't just making waves. She's leading the charge and shaping the future of business communication. And I love this. In her words, there's a life cycle for each and every small business, and to be successful business owners, they must pay attention to the four phases: startup, operations, growth, and stepping out. A small business is not just a scaled-down version of a large one. Strategies that work well for larger organizations may be counterproductive for small ones. So small businesses can court and win big business if they play to their strength: responsiveness, fresh ideas, flexibility, and more. Cynthia, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Well, hello, Denise, and I am so delighted to be here. Thanks for the invitation, because I love talking business.
You and me both, and your book is on my desk. And I was telling you in the green room, on social media, I kind of disappear on the weekend. It's because I'm reading. I'm reading my guests' books, and nobody talk to me. No talking. Leave me alone. I'm reading.
Well, first of all, I'm tremendously impressed that you read it, because a lot of people do these interviews without really diving deep into the content. And I just think it makes for such a good conversation when we're talking about the same thing.
Well, it does. And here's my attitude about it. I've got hundreds of books in this room, hundreds. And every single book in here came from people like you. You have been my guest on Your Partner in Success Radio. And my attitude is, if you took the time to write the book and then send me the book, I owe you a reading and a review. And I've done both. I always read the book when it lands on my doorstep. I'm lying. I don't read it. I glance through it and I sticky note it, you know, come back to this. But then the week of, or the weekend of, depending on where you land on the podcast schedule, I read the book. And then it gets really fat because I've got sticky notes all over it by the end. So
I want to know which pages you sticky noted, because I will take a good look at those.
Tell me what prompted you to write this book at this particular time. I asked you this in the green room, and I want you to share that response that you gave me with our audience, because I think it's important.
You know, I wrote a book about 10 years ago, and it was called Small Business for Big Thinkers. And I wrote it because I was doing a lot of speaking to groups and doing a lot of advocacy, and people were actually asking, like, where's the book? And there wasn't a book. So I wrote it. And then over the past 10 years, I just feel like I've experienced so much and I've gone through some of these phases of business. And when I started to look at what was in the market and what was out there to help small business people, I really didn't see anything that covered that whole life cycle. I mean, there's a lot of books about starting up, or there's books about if you're looking to find your next adventure. But in my mind, if you're going to be successful, you have to look at all the phases and really think about where you're going. And, you know, other people will say, well, I'm past the startup phase. And I go, yeah, but you're always starting something new in the business. So even though you may be into that next phase, there's new products, there's new services, there's really just reinventing yourself. So for me, it was really important to kind of take a deep dive into looking at what are those phases. And honestly, I think the thing I am most proud of is the fact that the book isn't just my experience or my business. I went out and I looked at businesses all over the country, and I found experts, you know, people who work with wealth management or who work with a foundation or who are helping people with mergers and acquisitions. And they were all so kind and giving to share their knowledge. And so I really felt like putting all of this information together in one place could be really important for small business owners.
And you know, one page that I've got sticky, I mentioned I have sticky notes everywhere. It's on page 9, and it's one of the chapter headings is a love-hate relationship. And you say, I believe there's always been a love-hate relationship between small business and big business. Let's talk about that, because I think that's pretty important. I also think a lot of people don't really understand what a small business is.
Well, you know, that's interesting you should say that, because I agree with you. I think most people tend to think of a small business as maybe a shop on Main Street or a solopreneur or a small service provider. But actually, small business is defined by the SBA. It can be up to 500 employees, which is really pretty big business if you think about it. And then, of course, there are micro businesses, which might be 10 employees or less. But small businesses, I think, have often felt like big business gets all the breaks. That when regulations are made or when people are looking to supply them, or that they tend to look at larger entities. That's kind of a myth, I think. And then big businesses always think that small business is the one that is kind of the darling of the consumer world, and that small business is viewed as that little engine that could, and they get all the notoriety and the accolades. And so I find it really interesting that there is this sort of dichotomy here about how people look at that small business, big business relationship. And what I love to say is that there's strength in both of these entities. And quite frankly, there are things that small businesses can learn from big businesses. And I often think that big business, if they were to look at some of the ways that small business gets things done, they could adopt some of the attitudes and the practices that we have. So I describe that love-hate relationship. And I am a small business, but most of my customers are very large businesses. And I found that that's just a huge advantage for me to be a small business serving them. Because we can bring them fresh ideas. I think we're responsive. You know, we don't have these layers of attorneys and processes and complicated procedures. So doing business with us really is delightful. That's what my customers tell me. And they go, wow, you get things done. You're agile.
Small businesses, you know, are much more agile.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because Agile as a process is being adopted by a lot of large businesses as a way to look at big projects and then kind of piece them into digestible doses and get things done. And yet that's the way we've always operated. I jokingly say whenever there's a huge initiative, we as small businesses don't have to get lean because we're already lean. But that really is so interesting. And I think playing to our strengths, and this is something that I love to tell small businesses, because I think so many of them are afraid. I think they hear the horror stories about, you know, big businesses are demanding and, you know, that constant pressure to reduce cost. And I think some of that is overblown. I really do. Granted, there are things that you need to know if you're going to work with large businesses. So, for example, you have to be prepared. You've really got to be at the top of your game. But it certainly isn't anything to be afraid of. And in fact, there's a huge opportunity if you just kind of jump in.
And that makes sense. And then I turn to page 10, and I love this because it's really what we're talking about here, why big businesses like small businesses. And I read that and I went, oh, they do? So off I went.
Yes, they absolutely do. And, you know, I think it's interesting because when you have that flexibility as a small business and you're willing to step out and do things, big businesses really like that. In fact, many of the people that I interviewed, they were procurement officers or their buyers, and they said some of the same things. What they love about a small business is that when they ask them to do something, even if maybe it's not part of that standard operating procedure, a small business is flexible enough to change course and get something done. And the other thing that big businesses love is that they often get to work with the owner or the executive staff of a small business. Whereas when they're working with a large entity, sometimes they're working with an account manager, and that account manager can change over and over, and people are always changing in large businesses. But small businesses really have a good, strong core of people. And, you know, when they get to talk to the owner, they get to talk to the people who are actually doing the work.
And I was writing down, I do this a lot when I'm talking with people, I take notes because I'm like, oh, I have to go back to that. What I wrote down, you were talking about the, you know, you have to be flexible enough. I wrote down that equals curiosity. How can we get this done?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that people are often afraid to do is challenge what someone is asking them to do. And here in my office, sometimes, you know, we'll say, oh, customer X will want this. And I say, but is that really what they mean? Is that really what they want? Could we maybe come up with a different and a better solution for them? That's where the curiosity comes into play. You know, if you're someone who doesn't just do what you're told, but you come back with an alternative solution, and maybe they don't accept it, but the fact that you're thinking through it and trying to give them the best product, the best solution, I think that's really impressive because it shows you have that curiosity. And when you have that, then you're what I call a true partner. You're not just a supplier, someone who kind of does what they're told and then kind of kicks something out the door.
That is so true. And I have found, listen, as entrepreneurs, as small business owners, I think you'll agree with this. We fail daily, big, little, you know, micro. We're going to make boo-boos.
Absolutely.
And we have to pull up our panties and get back to work. But what I have found in my case in particular is when I make a boo-boo or something just did not go the way I envisioned it, once I walk away and I shake it off and maybe curse a little bit or a lot based on difference, what's happening. But my creative brain will, you know, kick the lizard brain aside and say, ooh, better idea.
Yes, you know, I think people are afraid of failure, and I think they're afraid to say that they failed. You know, I believe that we need to teach people how to fail. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. When you fail at something, you are often, I think, more introspective. It's like, okay, what could I have done differently? Wait a minute, what did I miss here? Or what did I make an assumption about that wasn't correct? And when we do that, then the next time around, we are much better at what we do. When I do something and I'm successful out of the gate, you know, you're that kind of overnight success. It's like, wait a minute, how did I do that? But I think we spend more time thinking about things and maybe you can call it Monday morning quarterbacking it when we're a failure. And so we have a greater chance for learning. And I think I learn more from the things that I've done over time that haven't worked. So, you know, I've hired people I shouldn't have hired. I've tried to sell products that we probably didn't need to sell. But every single time you go back and you learn and then you get back out there. And I'm not afraid to say that I don't know.
I'll say, I don't have a clue, but I'll find out for you.
Absolutely.
Small businesses love to experiment. I think we talked a little bit about that. But on page 15, you've got this wonderful little section that says tips to succeed. And I love your little checklist. So, but I don't want to have to race through this book, but I want people to read it. So what are the four key phases that successful business owners must, absolutely must, that's underlined, focus on the life cycle of a small business? You've identified these. So share.
Absolutely. So when I look at a startup, and what I think is that, what I say that I think is very different than some people is that even at startup, you need to have an exit plan. And I know that that might be kind of counterintuitive for people because you're just in the initial phases. But what people don't sometimes understand is that if you know how you want to exit, it drives how you're going to grow and sustain that business. So let's say, for example, that you just want to grow like crazy and you're growing the business to, let's say, sell it and move on and do something different. Okay, well, that's a completely different kind of business model than someone that wants to be in a business for, say, 20 or 30 years. So the exit plan is totally different. So let's say maybe you don't ever plan to sell something, and you're creating a business that is a lifestyle business. And there's nothing wrong with a lifestyle business, but there's not going to be a lot there to sell when you're done. So in the startup, you have to really think about what's going to be that exit plan. And quite honestly, the question that I ask people is, you know, do you have the passion and do you have the staying power? Because I think some people are really strong at startup and then they lose the passion really quickly. So in that startup phase, you have to think about all of these things and a lot more. And then you move into that second phase where you're really focusing on operations. And this is where I think small businesses can really take a clue from big businesses. Because in a small business, a lot of the knowledge is just sort of in the head of the owner or the manager. And what I love to say is, you know, what happens if you get hit by a bus tomorrow? In fact, in my 35 years, I've played that scenario a lot with my staff. What if I get hit by a bus tomorrow? And so here's where small businesses need to do what big businesses do. They need to have systems in place. They need to have an infrastructure, and they really need to document everything. I tell the story of a co-founder of Big B Coffee, and they're one of the fastest growing franchises and just an amazing company. And the owner said to me, you document everything. For example, like if someone walks into my coffee shop and the person is already serving a customer, how do they greet the customer at the end of the bar? Now, I think that's getting pretty picky about documenting, but that's the kind of documentation that people really need to have in place so that everyone knows where to get things and how to do things. And then also the use of technology. When you're in that operational phase, there's a lot of technology that's available, but sometimes people don't have a strategy for it. So what they end up doing is, you know, they buy this piece of technology and then they add on this one and then this one. But there's really not a strategy. And so I think as you grow, you have to really pay attention a lot more to the operations. And you know, the other thing that I'll tell you is that in that operational phase, what you also have to look at and get really clear about is, who are you operating for? Who is your ideal customer? Because what happens in that startup phase is, sometimes people are just so happy to have customers that they just want to get people in the door. But then when you get to really focusing on that operational phase, you may find that you need to send some customers away. And you might need to really kind of refine who's that ideal customer that your operation is ideally suited to work with. And really, you kind of have to go through that customer list. And once you know who the ideal customer is, you want to add more of those people in. And then in the operational phase, I think a lot of people pay attention to how they make something or how they do something. but not necessarily so much about what's their company voice. So, like, what is it that they are trying to project out to the public? What's going to be the face of your business? And here's where you really have to start thinking about what you're going to develop as sort of that company look. Because the truth of it is that people do business with companies and brands that they love. And so you have to think about that.
And they have to trust you.
Absolutely.
If you're a CEO, this just blew up on Twitter, and I'm not going to say who it was, but this CEO lost $210 million, I think it was, the last time I checked, because he got political.
Yes, and in that operational phase, what I think happens is, you know, you've started hiring people, and then you have those processes in place. And many small business owners, quite honestly, don't know how to be the boss. They don't know how to be a leader because, honestly, they maybe haven't necessarily needed to know how to do that. But this is when things like understanding what are your values and operating with integrity and how do you make sure you're developing a great culture, a place where people want to work and they want to stay.
You yes. need to hear the people that are working with you and for you, because they're your soldiers. They're the ones that are out there. They're in the trenches. They know what's going on. Listen to them.
Yes. And you know, a lot has been said about the fact that we have so many generations in the workplace. I actually have five generations in my workplace. And I know there are lots of businesses that have at least three or four. And there is a huge difference in the generations. But what I've discovered is that each generation has strengths. And so I'm a baby boomer. And I know that there are things that I look at and things that I do that maybe that's not what the marketplace is looking for today. And this is where I rely on my younger employees. And I'm always saying, so, you know, tell me, what do you think? Tell me, what do you think? And if they say, well, how would you do it? I say, well, you might do it differently than I do. And honestly, that's fine. I think as long as we get results. And it is sometimes hard. I'm going to tell you, it's not always easy when you have this many generations. But here's where, if you put together a really solid operation and then you've documented things and people know how to get things done in the workplace and you've onboarded them properly, well, now they can get creative and they can really do lots of cool things, and that's what's going to move the business ahead.
Well, absolutely. And if they can communicate with each other and see the validity in the different things that, you know, we're putting out this or we're talking about this. Oh, I never thought of that. But they have to be able to speak with one another.
Yes, absolutely. So that third phase is where I talk about growth. And this one's tricky because there are lots of people and books out there about growth. But what I have to say to people is, you know, growth is great, but you only get one shot at it. And if you grow really wildly and you haven't done what you needed to do in that operational phase, you probably don't get another shot when you do something that doesn't please the customer. So I have a couple of strategies that I really love to talk about when I talk about growth. And one of them is called pay attention to small customers because they get bigger. So sometimes when you're looking to grow, you want to maybe look at smaller organizations. And the reason I say that is that you get in with them, you learn their business, you develop the relationship, and then as they grow, you're growing. So, you know, even though I work with large global giants, and they're the names that a lot of people will know, I'm always looking for smaller, innovative, entrepreneurial companies because I know that they're going to grow and they're going to bring us right along with them. And so that's one of the strategies. And then the other thing that I look at when I talk about growth is that it's really important for you to find companies today where they may be an umbrella company, where they may have lots of divisions. So, for example, we work with one company that has four companies under them. So if we get one of those business units, Well, now those people, we ask them to introduce us to the others. And frankly, that's how we've grown. It's one company, but they give you awareness with all of their other divisions, and sometimes their partners and their affiliates and their suppliers, you know, that maybe that whole supply chain. Because when people like what you do, they're willing to recommend you. So I think that growth is really great, but I often say maybe it needs to be measured growth. And really, that's kind of what I'm more comfortable with, and I think a lot of people are as well. And you do have to look at your comfort level. But certainly, you have to grow, and you have to understand that when you do that, you're not going to be able to do all the things that you did when you were a small operation. And part of the reason for that is I honestly can't know everything that's going through my operation. There are just too many projects. So I really have to delegate and trust and believe that the work is getting done well. And then that kind of leads me to the last phase that I like to talk about, which some people don't really like to talk about, and that is stepping out. And I started to make lists for myself. You know, what are the signs that I should stay? What are the signs that I should go? And I think one of the biggest things that people don't consider as they look at stepping out is that they maybe don't have the same passion that they once had for the business. And certainly passion changes over time. You know, our priorities change. And I can tell you that some of the things that I was really passionate about when I started the business, I'm not passionate about that anymore. But there's other things that I'm very passionate about. I'm really passionate about growing my team, helping them develop their skills, getting new customers. And then there are some of the more mundane tasks that I don't really love to do. So I think people, when their priorities change, maybe they don't realize it, but their customers and their employees realize it. They might see that, you know, that person is just kind of hanging on, not necessarily doing what's right for the business. And then there's one person that I interviewed who said he's never going to retire. He is never, ever going to retire. I think he said something like, they're going to have to carry me out with my boots on.
I understand that. My plan is to fall asleep. And when I'm about 100, 115, somewhere around there, and fall asleep, you know, while I'm plotting world domination and just not wake up again.
It's a plan. But there are people who want to move on to another adventure. So it's not necessarily that they're going to retire, but maybe they're going to take all of that energy and enthusiasm and they're just going to use it in a different way. So for me, I am doing a lot more speaking to entrepreneurs and writing and doing give backs and advocating, because that's really where my passion is. But am I ever going to stop working? Well, I seriously doubt that, because I love what I do, but maybe I will just do things in different ways. And what's really fun is I've interviewed different business owners. So my sister and her husband, they owned just an extremely successful business in the Raleigh-Durham area. And they sold the business about 7 years ago. And my sister is one of those people who is literally sitting on a beach, eating bonbons, and absolutely loving it. And I keep going, well, don't you want to volunteer? And she's like, yeah, no, I'm happy. I'm good. And then there's other people that I interviewed for the book who sold their business, went home one day, sat on the couch and said, well, what am I going to do now? And then they went back to work. So I think there's not one right thing. But what you do have to consider is, what are you going to do? Because you just don't want to let it happen to you. You want to be intentional. You want to go sit on a beach? Great. I said to my sister, I'll come down and sit with you on the beach and be there for a little while, but not every day.
I couldn't do it either, but good for her. She earned it, and now she's living her best life.
She is, and she's an amazing cook. She has lots of friends. They do things with the church. She has a grandchild. And right now, those things are just more important. So if you think about it, if you're not ready to step out, at least explore, like, what would your second or third chapter look like? What did the exit plan look like when you started? Is it the same now? What's amazing to me is that I know people in their 50s and 60s who have never even thought about an exit
plan. I know people like that too. But what I hear from them is, I'm never going to quit. Yeah, you are. There's going to be a health risk or something's going to happen, or you're just going to get good and sick of it. Mm-hmm. You're going to quit at some point. You're going to, as you say, step out. So you have to have a plan. And I wanted to go back a little bit. I'm on chapter 4. Get smart about partnering. Create a business prenup, which I think is so important. What we're talking about here, how do you exit?
Yes, you know that the reason that that chapter exists is that when I started my business, I actually did have a partner. And quite honestly, you know, I looked at all the things that they tell you to look at. And what I discovered is that it wasn't enough. And so I developed this concept, my concept of having this business prenup. And the things that you look at that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think would be an issue down the road, but, you know, it's not the business things that kind of get you in the end. It's all of the other things. It's those personal sidelights and issues.
Almost like going through a really bad marriage and saying, I hate you. I'm leaving.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting because I actually went to business counseling with my ex-partner to see if we could figure it
out.
Tell
us about that. I didn't know such a thing existed.
Yes. There actually is business counseling. There are groups that do that. It wasn't successful, but I do have to say I'm glad we did it. We talked about, you know, what were our goals, what were our ambitions. But I think as people, we were just really different people. I always have felt that knowledge should be shared, that you should bring people into your organization, and it's your responsibility as a leader to give those people opportunities for development. So I like to say I want to work myself out of a job, because then I can go find the next cool thing to do, and then I'll teach someone how to do that, and then I'll go to the next thing. And my ex-partner, his goal was to keep things really kind of small, tight, didn't want to share information. And honestly, you can't grow if you're not willing to do that. So we just discovered we were very different people. He also didn't like having business advisors. He thought he could do a lot of things himself. And if you're a small business owner today, it's really important that you have good small business advisors, because regulations change, things change, and you just can't possibly stay up with all of it. That's why you need those professionals. So, you know, I think for some people, having a business partner works. And for me, it just didn't. But, you know, take a look at my sister and her husband. They ran their business together for 20 years, and it was an amazing partnership. And that doesn't happen to everyone. And sometimes I think what happens is you get down the road and then you find you're growing in different directions. You want different things. And so you'll often see people exiting businesses and then maybe trying to figure out what they're going to do next. And some of the reason for that is that people change. Some of it is maybe you miss something at the startup that you didn't realize about your business partner. But when you get to that exit plan, and I can tell you, when my partner and I broke up, we had done a really good job of having the legal documents in place. And so that gave us the roadmap. And it was either I buy him out, he buys me out, or we sell the whole thing. Now, as it happened, I bought him out. And frankly, the business has done really well since then. So I've never entertained the decision to bring in another partner, but I have granted phantom stock to my employees because I think that that's important. And some say that, you know, it's really important that everyone needs to think about the business. And I think that does that. And what does the ideal look like? And then is that ideal achievable? And the more you think about it and those plans change, I will say I've had two or three different plans in place and they've changed. And so now I'm working on the next plan. But you know, as a business owner, you're responsible for people's lives. And you know that if you have employees, I believe it's your responsibility to do what's best for the business. And that means having a lot of things in place.
Well, that makes sense. And I've got to tell you, I've been skipping around on the book. I've sticky notes, index cards. I've even got index cards here, colored index cards. They're important. I know what I'm looking at by the color of what I'm looking at. But on chapter 16, you say create, and this is kind of what we're talking about now, create brand fanatics and nurture them. Now that can go any which way. I mean, brand fanatics can be the people who are coming to you to hire you or buy your purchase from you. That can also be part of your culture. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to say if your employees are not brand fanatics, if they don't love what they do, then they just can't project that to the outside.
There you go. That's what I was trying to ask.
In fact, you know, I talk about and people will say, oh, your name is on the door. Well, yes, my name is on the door. But you know what? Every one of the people in my office, I believe, feels an ownership in the business. And I can't tell you how proud I am when I hear them and they're on the phone and they're talking about it. Or I'll get a call from a client and the customer will say, gosh, it was just so exciting working with your team. Your people really love what they do. And when people do love what they do, it's infectious. There's not a time that I don't send a crew out. And again, it happened this week where I sent someone out, they got on a plane, went and visited the customer, came back, and they're two of my younger employees, and I got the same kind of great email back that I would get from even sending senior employees out. You know, wow, the customer said it was just such a pleasure to work with the team. So I would say my team, they are brand fanatics. And now you want to talk about the customer. You want them to be a brand fanatic. So if a customer is that, they're going to talk to other people about you. Here's a quick story. I got a call from a company just outside of Chicago, and this is a while back. And the woman said, you know, is this Cynthia? And I said, yes. And she gave me her name and she said, my boss told me to find you. And I started laughing and I went, okay. And the name of the company, and she said, you know, I wasn't one that I know. And I said, why did your boss want you to find me? And she said, well, he was actually at a conference down in Florida. And there was this session, and they were talking about the importance of video marketing. And one of the other people in the audience said, you know, if you're looking for someone who will just do a great job for your company, call Cynthia Kay and Company. And so this boss went home and he said to his marketing person, go find them. And so she did. Now, I don't know who that brand fanatic was that was in the room down in Florida. I kind of have a guess, and I'm pretty sure I know the company, but I probably don't know the person. But when you get that kind of an endorsement and, you know, someone just goes home and says to their marketing person, find them, well, to me, that's a great example of creating a brand fanatic. And it's not like I'm a retail brand or I make ice cream or shoes or, you know, something like that. But you can have brand fanatics even when you're a service company. And your customers will be out there telling people what a great job you did for them. And frankly, those are the best kind of customers that you want, because those new people come to you with an open mind and they will listen to what you have to say.
They do. And I scooted over to page 144, a brand champion or two. And you say you should also seriously consider cultivating a number of champions at a company because businesses are constantly shifting people around. Don't forget about that part. And therefore, it's likely that today's champion may not be in a position to help you tomorrow. Let's talk about that. And you've got a great quote from Mark Peters, the CEO of Butterball Farms.
Yes, I am just so appreciative that all of the people, including Mark, told us stories. And Mark's story is really great because he talks about the fact that when you're sitting in a room with someone, and I love that he says, there's rarely one person at the table who can say yes to you, right? But if anybody says no, even if one person says no, you're out. And I think that's why it's so important to me that you don't just try to educate one person. You have to have multiple contacts. And then you really have to, I call it, pull out all the stops. You really want to wow people. You want them to just be wild about what you do. And if they aren't, they're probably not going to go to someone and tell them about you. And maybe that person doesn't even have a great product or as great a service as you have. Mark has a really amazing point of view when it comes to that. And it's just really great work that he does. And he talks about, you know, really wanting to work with people. And I would tell you also, as a business owner, you want to have suppliers that are supplying you that love you, because it kind of goes both ways. So you have to look at that whole supply chain. You want to love the people who are your suppliers, and you want the people that you're serving to love you back. And if you create brand champions, then you do something really creative for them, and you really give them something that they're not going to get somewhere else, or let's say you make it easier for them than someone else does, because I actually think convenience is a huge thing today too. Sometimes it's so common to do business with organizations and people just quit. They go somewhere else because it's easier to do business with someone else. So I think that those are some of the things that are really important. And the brand champion maybe isn't always the person that you think it's going to be. Sometimes it's that behind the scenes player, believe it or not. It might be a project manager, or it might be an administrative assistant. I mean, there's lots of people that influence the decision makers. So don't discount people just because maybe they don't have a title. Often the people who can help you the most are the ones who can give you knowledge and share with you the things that will help you in that sale. And they might not be that decision maker. They may be the people that are surrounding that decision maker. I like to call them the gatekeepers.
Oh, absolutely. Those are the people you really want to win over. And at the end of this chapter, I love that you always have these tips at the end of each chapter. And your tips to succeed is, one, to turn someone into a brand loyalist or a brand fanatic, you need to solve a problem for them. Well, that's, you know, kind of self-explanatory. Then you say, try to identify individuals who can provide you with information and be your champion. And it might be, as you just said, the behind the scenes player. And if at all possible, have a number of individuals in different areas to help you make connections. And then finally, pull out all the stops to make your champions look good. They got you in the door and they can help you keep the business coming.
Yeah, and it's also really important that you don't try to take credit for it. You know, sometimes I see people go, well, you know, we did that. And I always love to say that my job is to make the customer look good. That's my job. I love it. And I love being behind the scenes and being able to do something. And so sometimes, in fact, I kind of have to stop myself, because we really do need sometimes to just sort of pat ourselves on the back. And so, you know, that's okay too, to be able to do that.
Well, yeah, but doing that internally does make more sense, because nobody likes a braggart. Yes, we do want to know if we're going to work with you or hire you to work with our business. Those can be internal conversations, but they shouldn't be splashed all over the place, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Nobody likes a braggart. Ask me how I know. Because every once in a while, I'll say, Denise, take a seat. Stop. Okay. So I'm still scooting through this book. It really is a great book, but I wanted to talk, because I'm a nerd. I am a nerd in stilettos. Let's talk about the technology. Is it your friend or is it your foe? You know what I'm going to say.
You're going to say it's your foe, right?
No, I think you have to have technology. I'm a nerd.
Okay. You're
seriously,
me.
I am a big, big nerd. If I can think of a difficult way to do it, my Blizzard brain will take over and go, ooh. And then my creative brain has to say, take a seat. Let's think about this.
Well, I think I said it a little earlier, but I think some of the problem with technology is just that there's so much of it that it can be overwhelming.
It can. And be careful. And, you know, listen to people who know what they're doing. Don't just jump onto chat, you know, GPT, because it's out there. And then, I mean, seriously, I'm going to tell y'all right now, you can ruin your brand if you're not careful.
Yes. And, you know, I'm amazed that people don't know that, but I think a lot of people don't. So what I like to do is say to people, look, there's a couple of things. One, I think sometimes people don't budget for technology, just like they don't budget for marketing. A lot of small companies just don't think about budgeting for technology. And I think you really have to consider both what's available, but also having some guidance from people. So I can tell you what I did, because for a while I actually had someone in-house who was doing IT. And what I discovered is that I didn't know what I didn't know. I mean, I seriously did not know what to ask him.
People say, oh, yeah, we can do this. We can do this. If you don't ask serious questions, you're going to get gobbledygook. Trust me on this.
Yes. And you probably know more than I do. But how do you even manage someone when you don't know the right questions to ask? So what I ended up doing was going out and looking at technology companies, and frankly, some of them were just not a customer for. Some of them want, you know, 100 more users. Some of them want 100 or more users, or 250 or more users. So smaller businesses have to look at what's the sweet spot of the technology company. And then I think you should do an audit, and it's something that I did. I had someone come in, they looked at what we had, they looked at our software licenses, they looked at our firewalls and our systems, and then they came back with a recommendation. And often the people who do the audit are not the people who will actually be the ones who are going to become your managed IT company. And I think that's good, because what they're going to do is give you that objective point of view. And I believe that's what you need. You need somebody to be objective. My expert in this area was Chad Paulman, and Chad runs an amazing business called New Wave Technologies, and he's also on a Cisco advisory board, so he really knows his stuff. But what he talks about is this kind of dirty little secret about technology, and what people don't know is that it's an unregulated industry. So it's not like I'm going to a CPA or an attorney that has credentials. Not everybody who runs an IT company has the certifications and all the licenses that are needed. And how do you even know if maybe they have a license, but it's not current? So I think it's really important that you do some assessments, you ask some people. That's how we found ours. And again, here, word of mouth, using your network is what I think is really beneficial. And then don't be afraid to challenge people when they come back. We've switched IT companies a couple of times and finally have one we're really pleased with. But I think it takes a little trial and error. And one of the things is if you don't embrace technology today, you know, you might as well forget it, because that's the way the world is going, whether you like it or not. And in my industry, there are places where we are using AI. For example, AI has been built into some of the software that we use, where if you're going to, say, color correct something, it might get you 80% of the way. But then you do still have to go in and work it. And so I think there's some really good uses for AI, and there's probably some very bad uses for AI. So you, if you use it and you use it for the wrong thing, I think your credibility is really going to need to be repaired. And that might just be next to impossible if you make a mistake.
It is. And look, I love AI. I'm fascinated with it. Yeah, I dream in code. I build websites while I'm standing over a pot of gumbo. This is how my brain works. Fascinating, I know. And I'm, you know, I do have a sense of humor, so I'm not your normal techie nerd. But the thing is with AI, with chat, with any of these new things that are coming up, test them. Do not take the first hallucination they give you. And there's a reason that why that's a term. Oh, ChatGPT is hallucinating. Yes, it is. But I like to use it to get ideas. I get ideas. Ooh, let me go look at that. And then off I go. Sometimes I go down a rabbit hole. Sometimes I'm like, that's brilliant. Let me work with that. But I use it specifically these days to give me ideas. Because sometimes my creative brain says, I'm tired. So I need a new ideas. There's ways to use it, but find the experts, not people. I'm telling the audience this, and I mean it. Not people who did like they did with the VA industry some years ago, like people are doing with the podcast industry. All of a sudden, they're experts because they have a keyboard. They're not. Find people who actually know what they're doing and can guide you or consult with you or show you some better ideas. Don't just take the first thing that comes down the road. Do your homework. Did I sound mad?
So something that you just said really struck me. A lot of times in business, there are consultants. And frankly, it seems like everybody's writing a book. And what I want to say is many of these consultants have never signed the front of the check, you know. And I know that most people don't sign the fronts of checks anymore, but the concept of it, that's my analogy. And my point is that they've never done many of the things that they're really trying to teach other people to do.
Exactly. You just said it better than I did.
And I find that I can get annoyed at that because you don't know if you're giving good advice. And if people are listening to you and the advice is not solid advice, then, you know, we kind of already know what's going to happen. And the failure rate in small business is really huge. So if you're listening to bad ideas, you're going to be one of those people that just doesn't make it.
No doubt about it. And listen, I know we've got maybe about 5 or 6 minutes left, but I have another sticky note, and that's on chapter 19, give something away, get more business. And I've heard this all of my business life. Oh, you've got to give things away. And then other people say, oh, I don't want to give my best ideas. It's a conflict. But one of you cover what to give away, and then you cover who is a great target for a giveaway. My favorite part of this particular part of the book is giving back. So can we chat about this chapter a little bit?
Well, first of all, I love that. And my first rule about giving back is if you're doing it because you think you're going to get more business, well, don't do it. In my mind, it has to come from a good place. My background, actually my whole history, my father was a small business owner. And from time to time when I was growing up, I saw how my dad and his business did huge give back. And my dad was a dry cleaner, right? He was a CPA by background, but he went into business with his brothers and they ran a dry cleaning store. And there was, of course, a little Greek chili dog restaurant across the parking lot. And well, when you spill the chili dog on yourself, you go to the dry cleaner. There you go. Talk about that. But what I learned from my dad was that he was always giving to organizations. So little league teams that needed their kids' uniforms done, or churches that needed vestments cleaned, or a theater that needed curtains cleaned. I mean, they were always doing something. They were always volunteering. And they were volunteering for things that my mom and dad had a passion for. My dad used to say, God's given us a lot, and so it's our responsibility to pay it forward. And when I worked in television, probably one of my most favorite things to do was to work on features for nonprofits and things that, you know, helped community organizations. And then when I started the business, that just kind of naturally became part of what we did. And over the years, we've given away hundreds of thousands of dollars of media production services. And I've served on boards where I'll lend my expertise, and my employees serve on boards. They get time off if they want to do something, and we can go and do a project. And the give back is something that one feels kind of really good because you feel like you're giving somebody something of value that they can't do. So in my case, video production, but every company has something that they can do that nobody else can do. So you just have to look at those things and then think about, you know, how do you want to do the give back? I know that when we do things, it makes people who work here feel good. I had an employee who all through college did video for a group called Angels in Action. And when she came here, she asked if she could still keep doing promotions for them. And I said, you know, absolutely. I mean, if you have a passion for it, I want you to do that. So that give back is important. Now, does it get your name out? Absolutely. And that's great, too. And if people want to come to you, that's wonderful. But the reason you do the give back is really because it makes your people feel good while they're working on these things. It builds your team, and you can feel really proud about what you do.
And, you know, I love that she felt comfortable enough with your culture to ask you that. That's not something you would think, you know, as part of the hiring process. Oh, by the way, you just wouldn't think it.
No, but I think that's where you find the difference in generations. These things are very important to them. And the idea of giving something away, I'll tell you, I spend a lot of time talking with business owners about that. And sometimes I go, please don't start a business, or I don't think you're ready, or okay, you're ready, but you might want to get some education and some help first. But some of that is also when you're starting that business, thinking about the giving back or giving something away in my case. And, you know, sometimes even in our dealings with potential customers, we give things away. We give ideas away. I've had customers who have gone through some really tough times during the pandemic and during the recession that happened years ago. And we actually thought about it and said, you know what, we can discount our prices. And we helped our customers so that they could continue to do business. And we did that because we found ways of simplifying projects so that they didn't have to, you know, do nothing, but they had limited budgets. And what we did, I think, created a lot of loyalty. Because when you do that, people appreciate it. Now, every once in a while, you get the one, you know, the one customer or the one organization that doesn't appreciate it, and they kind of go away. But I think more often than not that when you're invested in people and you care about them and they see that you're willing to talk to them and do things for them, that they're going to come back to you. And that's a true partnership in my mind.
I agree with you. Cynthia, this has been an amazing conversation, and I thank you so much. So do me a favor and do you have any last thoughts to share? And then tell our listeners how they can connect with you on the web and find your book. And by the way, y'all, read the book. Seriously.
Well, I appreciate that. The book, Small Business, Big Success, Proven Strategies to Beat the Odds and Grow a Great Business. Because I know people do want to beat the odds. And it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Porchlight. And I'm also available to speak. And the easiest way to connect with me is CynthiaKBiz.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. So any of those ways, and I just have to tell you, I so appreciate the thoughtfulness of the questions, Denise, and the time that you spent reading my book. That truly means a lot.
As we conclude today's episode, your feedback means a lot to me. And if you found the show helpful, please support us with a quick review on iTunes. And I ask you that because your input is vital in my mission to inspire and empower more individuals. So don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a review, and share your Partner in Success Radio with friends. And be sure to find Cynthia Kay on the web and connect with her and grab her book. It's available on Amazon. So thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next week.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.